Welcome to First Take, everybody. Let me just add to Stephen A's little intro there. Stephen A. Smith went to the barber. Max Kellerman got a tan. And I'm just Molly Karam Rose trying to survive out here. Gentlemen, before we get started, I have my niece, Nev, here with me. She's watching, wants to go into the business. What piece of advice do you have for her?
Hard work, dedication, and don't get caught up in the glitz because it ain't what it seems.
Max?
I think that's good advice. I think anyone trying to get into this industry or really any other, it's about the way you think. So, you know, work on your brain. You'll be fine.
All right.
And Molly, can you ask,
let's go.
Before we start, I'm sure Max didn't fly. I'm sure even the great Max Kellerman didn't fly to the islands or something like that in the last 24 hours. How the hell did he get a tan in the last 24 hours?
I think Max
some tanning machine.
It's called bronzer, Stephen A.
Say what?
Yeah, it's called bronzer, Stephen A. I am a man who wears makeup to work.
Okay, got it. I just wanted to make sure. Molly said what she said. Oh, I didn't understand.
I needed that smile, guys. Right. You both look great. All right, we'll leave it there. Let's get it going because the Eastern Conference not looking so hot, in my opinion, right now. It was a battle of first place squads in the East. Nets at Sixers. Philly got the 6-point victory, but Brooklyn was without Kevin Durant, James Harden, LaMarcus Aldridge, or Blake Griffin. You'd think without all those starters, Philly would be more dominant. They gave up a huge lead. Stephen A., are you disappointed by Philly last night for not owning things?
Without question. I mean, if you're the Brooklyn Nets and you don't have KD and you don't have James Harden and still in all with Kyrie Irving and Joe Harris and guys like that, not to say Kyrie is in that category because he's in the category of James Harden and KD, but you get what I'm saying. The fact that the Sixers needed to pull Joel Embiid off the bench because they surrendered a 21-2 run to let Brooklyn back into the game. I think that is a bad sign. I'd also like for the record to show that the Philadelphia crowd, you know, I mean, remember, I worked in Philadelphia for 17 years as a writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer and ultimately a columnist the last 10 years or so of my career there. I have to tell you something. It is a huge mistake. As knowledgeable as Sixers fans are, it is a huge mistake for them to be chanting that KD, you know, sucks. That's what they said. KD, that's what they said about Kevin Durant. He was on the sideline looking at them like, don't understand. What the hell are they talking about me for? You're going to rue the day you do that because we can say a lot of things about Kevin Durant. The one thing we cannot say is that this brother can't ball. We certainly can't say that. This dude is one of the top two players on the planet Earth when he is healthy. There's no doubt in my mind. And for the Philadelphia 76ers to know that the likelihood is that you're going to have to go up against that brother. And for the fans to be chanting at him that way, that's not going to bode well for them either. There's a price that's going to be paid for that. And I think the combination of those two things, as far as I'm concerned, left the night, for me, not that great for the Philadelphia 76ers, despite the win. I think that two messages were sent. I mean, one to KD that they're going to pay for, and the other was the fact that without KD and James Harden, they still almost came back and beat the 76ers. I think it's something that works against the 76ers on this particular day.
I'm not disappointed by the 76ers. I'm going to get to your points in a second, Stephen A. I've got things to say about that, but I'm not just – listen, they were controlling the whole game between, like, 8-ish and 14-ish points most of the time, right? Like, that's basically what happened. And they know they're playing a team who's playing a second of back-to-back. And they knew coming in, no James Harden, and then come to find, no Kevin Durant. And they're controlling the game. And as you said, Embiid's on the bench. And, you know, and then, by the way, Kyrie comes out of the game. The game's over, right? This is human nature. This happens in basketball. They took their foot off the gas. They figured the game's over. And then all of a sudden, whoa, game's not over. And then the game was over. Then they're like, oh, okay, let's put this, you know, got within 3 points. Then, let's put this away. And they did. You never got the sense that they were going to lose the game. Now, Kyrie didn't come back in the game. Had Kyrie come back in, maybe they win. But it did not escape my attention that Philly was controlling the game with Kyrie in. They made the run without Kyrie. And as spectacular as Kyrie has been this year, I think if Brooklyn would have had James Harden, maybe it's a little different. Like, let's get rid of this idea that the Sixers have any chance to beat a fully healthy Brooklyn team. They don't. They have no shot to do it. No one does. If this team is fully healthy, no one's got a shot to win. So it's not like, well, because the Sixers struggled down the stretch with Brooklyn, then in the moment of truth, if Brooklyn's healthy, maybe the Sixers won't be able to beat them. We already know they won't be able to beat them if Brooklyn's healthy. By the way, apologies to Embiid, because Brooklyn has no answer for him. He's going to get his, but that's one guy on that level. And Ben Simmons almost. They got three dudes like that. Now to KD. Stephen A., you think that had Philadelphia been chanting, KD is great, he wouldn't be giving them the business later on in the playoffs? KD is going to get his regardless if they say he stinks, if he's awesome, whatever it is. Let the fans chant what they want. I love it. Yeah, of course, boo and insult the visiting star. What's right. wrong with that? That's like, that happens all the time.
Well, there's a lot, there's a lot of things that you don't get about basketball. So I don't mind teaching you and giving you lessons. Like, for example, when you bring up KD and you say, what's different than he's going to do? What's different? So what? What if they chanting KD's great, KD's great? He's still going to give them the business. Remember one of the things that we continuously bring up about KD, what he could do if he wanted to, but what he chooses not to do. One of the things about Kevin Durant is that he's not only phenomenal as a basketball player, it's because of his efficiency. You know, this is a dude that doesn't just drop 30, but it's on better than 50% shooting. It's on better than 40% shooting from three-point range. Well, what if he got aggressive? What if they sat up there and said, I'm rolling into Philadelphia. I remember what they were saying about me. Instead of shooting 20 shots, let me shoot 30. You know what I'm saying? Instead of distributing the basketball and playing the right way, let me remind them of who the hell I am. I'm just saying, no matter what we see from him, with Kyrie, that's different. He's a killer. With James Harden, particularly the James Harden that was the league scoring champion over the last 3 years, that's different. But with KD, one of the things that we don't always get is a level of aggression and assertiveness. Yes, he plays the right way. Yes, he's unselfish. Yes, he's efficient. But we don't see him ultra aggressive. So the point is that if you tinker on getting him to be more aggressive and really, really to be assertive and come at you, it could be nightmarish in a lot more ways than we haven't even seen yet. That's all I mean by that.
Well, I mean, okay, but that's one dude. Those points count the same if the ball's distributed or if one dude is getting those points. And speaking of that, my big takeaway out of this game is this, Stephen A. Kyrie Irving, I think, has to show at some point that when he's the only one of the big three there, the team functions better with him on the floor than with him off the floor. Stephen A., I'm not saying that definitively last night shows they're better without him. No, of course not. Because as I said, it's human nature. The Sixers are controlling the whole game. Oh, now Kyrie is out too. We got this. And everyone else on the Nets fought hard. Good for them, especially on the second of back-to-back on the road. Good for them. But still, it's happened too many times in Kyrie's career when he is the solo star, because he's an amazing player. The team too often functions better with him off the floor. It should never be that way. I got the distinct impression last night that if it were James Harden on the Nets and the Sixers were playing like that, the Nets might have won that game if it was Harden. Harden's not more talented than Kyrie. There's no reason Kyrie should not be able to have that same effect.
But we don't disagree there. I mean, I look at that. I look at Kyrie and I look at James Harden. They bring two different things to the table, because even with James Harden, when he was in Houston, dribbling the basketball all the damn time, it was necessary. And it was playing for a coach of Mike D'Antoni that allowed that to happen. In the case of Steve Nash in Brooklyn, it's a little bit different. And when you look at the pieces around you, what James Harden is doing is showing his greatness because of his willingness to be selfless. So I think that comes with it. Excuse me, I almost had to sneeze.
All right, guys.
Excuse me.
Let's keep it moving here. Bless you. So last night, guys, I get home, turn on ESPN 7 Eastern to watch the game, and I see Lisa Salters do her report from the sideline, and I hear no one's playing. It's not the first time it's happened this season, and it's disappointing. So again, no Harden, no KD last night. We haven't had LeBron or AD. A lot of stars have been out this season, especially for the major marquee matchups we're all clamoring to see. Well, several NBA general managers and team health officials say the unorthodox and compressed schedule has led to a rash of injuries around the league, with several teams fearing player health has reached a boiling point. So, Stephen A., with that being said, do you have a problem with players resting, given the growing concern about injuries this season?
First of all, it's bogus. I took the liberty of speaking to a few NBA officials, and injuries this year compared to last year are actually down. That's number one. They're not up. So that's a bogus. And I'm not talking about the report by anybody else. I'm not questioning that people are telling the truth based on the information revealed to them. What I'm saying is that anybody in the NBA who's told that to whatever respective reporter wrote it is lying. The injuries are down. They're not up. That's number one. Number two, because the NBA wanted to make sure folks know that, because those were quotes that were buried in the articles that was written about this. And I just heard from somebody literally just a few minutes ago on that matter. So let's get that clear. Number two, I had a couple of coaches reach out to me in the last 24 hours and say to me, Stephen A., I need you to dig deeper, because it's not just the players, it's the respective medical staffs of the team, because you have teams protecting their investments and what have you, medical staff, personnel, watching their own backs and what have you, and encouraging these guys and insisting that these guys sit out even when the guys want to play. And everybody keeps putting stuff on just the players. It's not just the players. It's the medical staff as well. So that needs to be some, you know, people need to dig into that a little bit more. I know that I certainly will in the days, weeks, and months to come, because if you got players that want to play, it's incredibly unfair for people like myself, you, Max, and people throughout this industry to be going over the airwaves just talking about players as if they're the sole individuals making this decision, when in fact those decisions are coming down from the team via the medical staff, because they're trying to protect the investments. We've got to keep an eye on that just to make sure we're calling them out instead of the players, in interest to fairness to the players. Having said all of that, let me say this. There's certain guys that you don't question. I don't give a damn if LeBron James doesn't play for a month. I don't care if LeBron James came out here today and said, I'm healthy, but I need the rest. He gets a pass from me. This man's been to 10 NBA finals. He shows up religiously night in and night out. Before he went down, he hadn't missed but one game, I think. You look at the Joker, Jokic, he hasn't missed a game all season long. People like him, the Joker, Damian Lillard, James Harden, guys like that. Even to a lesser degree, Kevin Durant. Listen, Kevin Durant is a guy that was known to just grab a ball and go anywhere to play basketball. He clearly loved playing the game. And when he's been out, it was for legitimate reasons. But when I see Kawhi Leonard chilling on the bench in Detroit yesterday, okay, and exercising load management when he was with Toronto two seasons ago when he missed 22 games, or last year practicing and playing whenever the hell he chose and stuff like that. When I see stuff like that, I get a bit alarmed. The reality of the situation is, Max, and in a roundabout way, not directly, because I'm not accusing you of having that kind of impact, but I'm going to blame people like you too, Max, that diminish and minimize the regular season. So you see, you don't get paid just for 2 months, okay? And you, this notion that you get paid to win the chip, that's not true. Because guess what? 14 teams don't even make the postseason, and at least 24, 25 teams don't have a snowball's chance in hell most seasons of winning the championship. So when you get paid $20, $30, $40 million a year, okay, guess what? It's because during the season, obviously not this one, but during the season, you're asking the paying customer to patronize your product and your brand. That's what you're doing. And the fact that you got guys with a laissez-faire attitude going about the business of taking games off when they want to, not taking games off. And I'm also going to blame Greg Popovich, the great Greg Popovich. Remember years ago when he sent Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and them home on Southwest Airlines, and the public saw them in the airport in Orlando, Florida? They had a nationally televised game on TNT, but you didn't want to play guys back-to-back. I'm just saying, the disregard for the brand, the disregard for the product, the disregard for the fan is insulting. And ultimately, this is the kind of stuff that is going to hurt the NBA. You could bet the house. I promise you, as a person that has been covering collective bargaining negotiations for the last 25 years. That's what I've done. And I'm telling you, you wait until the next negotiations come up. The league is going to get sit across from those players, and somehow, some way, chickens are going to come home to roost, per se, and the stuff that's happening now, future generations of players are going to pay for this because of the disregard for simply showing up to come to work every day. I'm telling you, watch what happens.
Well, you made a bunch of my points, but we come to very different conclusions. I'll start with me, Stephen A. The reason things are like this starts with guys like me who are counting rings. That's right, I'm counting rings. You're damn right I'm counting rings, especially in the NBA, because the NBA is fundamentally determinative. It's not probabilistic the same way football and baseball are. You have fewer players. You can run all your plays through your best players. You have a best of seven series. The best team almost always wins. And you know who the best team usually is? The team among evenly matched teams with the best players. That's so you're so yes, I am counting rings. Got that straight. And a lot of people in the media and a lot of fans are, and so are a lot of players. It doesn't mean if you never win a ring, you're disqualified as a great player. But we're talking about the best of the best of the best. So, yup, responsibility right here, and I'm not apologizing for it. And I ain't the only one.
You should.
Two.
You should.
Greg Popovich. You brought up Greg Popovich. Absolutely right. The man won five championships as a coach and used to tell Tim Duncan, I was going to use the same example, don't even get on the plane, because he won all five with Tim Duncan, right? Don't even get on the plane. So he believed it was a competitive advantage in terms of winning championships to not even travel with a team sometimes. Then Kawhi Leonard took it to the next level and load managed all year and won a championship and finals MVP. So now what you're talking about is the balancing of business interests and competitive interests, because we can clearly see that teams believe and players also believe that their competitive interests are sometimes best served by load managing. Now, let's look at last night for an example. Because, of course, Stephen A., you think I don't want to watch that game and KD is not playing? Of course not. I wish Brooklyn would have rested KD against Minnesota and played him on the second of back-to-back so he's not playing two nights in a row against Philadelphia. They right. probably made the decision
which,
they
by
did.
The way,
like,
he was
let's
at,
make
which,
sure
by the
we
way,
get that, that win
that's
against
why they
the
sat him last night. Just so you know, that's why they sat him last night
right,
because
right.
of the night before against Minnesota.
Yeah, second
yes.
of back-to-back.
Yes. Yeah, because the game was
yeah,
delayed
second of back-to-back.
Because
you're not
of the shooting.
Come.
Because of the shooting in Minnesota, and they moved the game back.
Yeah. And I think you would agree, coming off an Achilles, KD probably shouldn't be playing second of back-to-backs,
I agree.
Right? So I also disagree with the choice of games that they – but from a competitive point of view, they're like, eh, we're not worried about Philly if we're all healthy. Let's make sure to get the win against – let's in the next two games, let's get one win for sure. We'll play them here. We'll rest them there. I disagree
right.
with the decision, but reasonable people can disagree. Now, Kawhi with the knee, the only real superstar who sat out last night where you're like, eh, was Paul George. Paul George, what was the reason really for Paul George sitting out? Although he's been playing
rest.
So well and the Clippers
rest.
Have championship aspirations and they
rest.
Beat Detroit without Paul George.
Rest.
Right, right. So if you want to argue like Paul George is the one example last night, but Paul George isn't a dude who usually misses games for rest.
Right.
I don't know. Like, I think
right.
that you're overstating the problem here.
Well, I'm not overstating the problem. And I'm not going to be honest. I'm going to be honest with you. You should be ashamed of yourself. Why don't you just take a vacation? Why don't you just quit the damn business if that's the case? It don't make no damn sense what you're saying right now, to be quite honest with you. And I'm going to tell you why. Let's go. Let's knock it down. Let's go down the list. You Greg Popovich. You know you got a game on TNT years ago, and that's what you do? You send Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili home. People spot them at a Chick-fil-A in the airport in Orlando when they're supposed to be watching them on TNT. It was just disrespectful to the league at the time. And I love Greg Popovich. I respect the hell out of this man. But that's just the truth. When you talk about a Kawhi Leonard, for example, I understand. Again, I'm not talking about people who have legitimate injuries. You're talking about individuals, Max, that have a mentality where it's, okay, excuse me, to prevent myself from from coming to the point where I do hurt, let me make sure I rest. And then let's take into consideration last night. Do I think that the Brooklyn Nets should have said, hell with that, KD, you ain't playing until you go up against Philly in a nationally televised game against a team tied with you for the best record in the Eastern Conference with everybody and their mother looking forward to that? Yes. Last time I checked, Max knows something about marketing. Max knows something about branding. Max knows something about maximizing a level of exposure that you're going to get. Who are people watching? Are they watching the Brooklyn Nets in an afternoon game against Minnesota? Or are they going to watch the Brooklyn Nets tied with a 37-18 record at the time, going up against Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, and the Philadelphia 76ers.
I agree with that part, everybody Lolly, real quick.
I know you agree with that. My point is, how could you say what you say knowing what you agree with that?
There's no respect for the game. Because you are talking about business interests. You're, in fact, not supposed
I'm
to
talking
allow
about
business
the fans.
Interests, marketing interests. Wait a minute, to interfere with competitive interest. What's the competitive interest of the team? At the beginning of each season, you're trying to win the chip. That's the goal. Not to win each individual game that's the whole thing.
Guys,
Stephen A., if you're playing chess,
later.
You have to go get the king. You might sacrifice
Molly,
some
I know
pawns.
You got to go. That's an ignorant statement. Yeah. It's just flat out ignorant. We'll get back
to this
later.
Let me just say something.
It's ignorant.
We're going to get back to this later in the show because there's more to say.
Talk
let me just say this.
For what?
In layman's terms, as a fan, and Max, you can respond to this later. Last night, I'm so excited to watch the game. This happened with the Lakers game the other night. If this continues to happen, fans are not going to clamor to watch the games because they know the stars aren't playing. So, yes, I also count championships and rings as well, but protecting the integrity of the game matters as well. And that's why someone like the Joker is the front runner for MVP right now. The man doesn't miss games.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
I still can dominate this league. I know that. But if I ever reach that my max potential or getting back there like I feel now, they say the sky's the limit, but it's probably higher than that. They got a great team. They're definitely on a winning team. You won 12 games last year, right? More than what my team I played for won last year, I think.
Jadeveon Clowney is all smiles, and he's a Brown. The free agent defensive end will make up to $10 million, a source telling our Adam Schefter. The Browns will pair Clowney with all-pro Myles Garrett to chase quarterbacks and maybe get deeper in the playoffs. The number one overall pick in 2014, Clowney hasn't always played up to his potential, and he's also dealt with a myriad of injuries. Max, should the Browns be the favorites in the AFC North now?
Yes, they should be, and I realize we're talking about this before the draft, and it's a competitive division. I'm talking about right now, Stephen A., right now before the draft, the Browns should be favored. They're a double-digit win team, came up in the world, won games they needed to win late, even when they lost to Baltimore. Stephen A., that was a back-and-forth game. When you look at the Browns, where's the weakness exactly? Baker Mayfield, the former number one overall pick, didn't look great early on in his career because he played for four head coaches in basically two seasons. As soon as he got a head coach that was right for him, he had a very good season last year. And you look around, he has weapons everywhere on offense in terms of guys to throw the ball to, and that's without Odell Beckham Jr. Now, I've been on the record, Stephen A., I think Odell and Baker are best off apart from each other, right? They'll both be more productive. And the Browns are listening to offers for Odell, and maybe they'll get some good stuff for him. God forbid he should simply return to the Browns, and now Odell is out on the field, yet another weapon for Baker if they can figure that out. And I didn't even mention the running game. The running game is dominant behind, you know, with two great backs. Stephen A., the reason for that is not only that the backs are very talented, they have the best offensive line in the business. Pro Football Focus ranked them number one pass blocking and run blocking, right? Number one in the league. You know, the Cowboys' offensive line isn't what it once was. So they have a dominant offensive line, weapons everywhere, a running game. Now look at the defense. They spent free agent money this year. The draft hasn't even happened yet, bolstering that defense. And Jadeveon Clowney, Myles Garrett, he's incredible. Jadeveon Clowney has been an underrated player because he's a good run stopper, right? He doesn't put up sexy stats. The sacks is what we look for. It's easy to understand with defensive end or guys who play on the defensive line. And he can go get the quarterback. We've seen it when healthy. He can go get the quarterback, but he can also stop the run. You have him and Myles Garrett coming off either end with all the additions on defense. Yeah, not only will I say that the Browns should be favored in the AFC North right now, they're contenders to win the Super Bowl. They are Super Bowl contenders.
Well, they're contenders, but I'm not gonna give them the nod as the favorites because they're the Browns. What can't go wrong will go wrong to some degree by Lake Erie. This is what it has been, and this is what it will continue to be. Now, they've obviously improved. You got Baker Mayfield that went up in touchdowns from 22 to 26 from the previous year, but he went down in interceptions from 21 to 8. So Kevin Stefanski deserves a boatload of credit. He did a hell of a job last year as the head coach for the franchise. Him and Barry as the GM, obviously an African-American, very, very proud of what he's doing thus far. They're definitely a contender. I'll give them props and credit for that. I don't know how big of a pickup Clowney is. Remember that Clowney is supposed to be somebody that can register sacks, Max. He's got like three in the last 2 years. Not a single sack last year in the 8 games he played in Tennessee, just 3 the year before he played in Seattle. And let's also be honest about the fact that he's lost out because this guy was looking for about $18 to $20 million a year when he ended up departing from Seattle. And now he's signing 1 year deals worth up to $10 million. Obviously, there's incentives in that contract that's going to get him to $10 million. So somewhere along the way, if the way what you feel about him, evidently a lot of people don't because they ain't willing to pay him to have them on their team, the exorbitant amount of dollars that he was looking for. Him being there with Myles Garrett and Sheldon Richardson, I get it. They're formidable, no doubt about it. But when I look at the rest of the AFC, this is the AFC North that we're talking about here. And I think it's the division that has been historically owned by Pittsburgh or Baltimore, and I think that will continue to be the case. When you've got Lamar Jackson being as electrifying as he is, and you've got faith in an organization that'll probably get him some help, they're Rough Riders, they're experienced, they know what they're doing. I like what I saw from them in the playoffs, even though they lost. They were highly competitive, and I look at it from that perspective, and I say on paper, the Cleveland Browns are definitely contender, and they're real and live, as you would say, Max, and I don't disagree with you, but in the end, I really, really do believe it comes down to Baker Mayfield, and even though he has improved, and he did have a good second half of the season, got them to the playoffs, got a playoff victory over my Steelers, Baker Mayfield deserves a whole lot of credit. I get all of that. But I also think that let's not act like he was lights out, like this is a future Hall of Famer in the waiting. Could it end up that way? Sure. But that's not what we've seen as of yet. And I think if you're an opponent and you put it in the hands of – and you force the Browns to put it in the hands of Mayfield to make him beat you, I want to see that to believe that they're the team to beat in the AFC North. I'm not convinced of that. I'm not saying they can't make the playoffs or anything like that. Not saying they can't make any noise. But when we talk about the favorites in the NFC North, I need more of a body of work than what I've seen to elevate the Browns to that status.
Actually, you can look at the division right now. And when you look at the quarterback position, you can't just isolate the quarterback position and say Baker's better than Lamar Jackson, right? But when you look at the production you expect to get from the quarterback position, Ben Roethlisberger has no offensive line, consequently no running game. And as a result, considering his arm's not what it used to be, those disadvantages compound. We saw it last year. I expect to see it again this year. I take Baker over Ben this year. Lamar Jackson, they need a dynamic offensive weapon or two to go with Hollywood Brown, who's not a number one receiver. He's fast, but he's not a number one receiver. And so they don't have that right now. That's why I say, like, I reserve judgment till after the draft. But right now they don't have that. I'd expect Baker to be more productive given his offensive line and running game and pass-catching weapons than Lamar. And now you finally have Joe Burrow, who is going to be, I think, better than Baker. But right now, coming off catastrophic injury as a rookie where he didn't get to play a whole lot because of that injury in his second season, as of this moment, you may be looking at the most productive quarterback passing the ball in the AFC North in Baker Mayfield. Even if he's not an MVP caliber player, he's a pretty good player already and with a chance to get better.
Can't deny it. That's a valid point. Not saying it's not. I'm just saying I don't believe it. You know, there's been plenty of times where we look at stuff and we calculate, where we deduce based on the facts presented to us. This is where we're going to go. But there have been other times when we say we don't give a damn what the facts would indicate to us. When we're talking about that dude or that franchise or that division or that conference, it ain't happening. You understand? I remember a couple of years ago, we had our brother Damian Woody come on national television and acknowledge that the Cowboys were going to the Super Bowl. Because on paper, look at their roster. I mean, my God, aren't they going to the Super Bowl? How'd that work out? You understand? We've seen plenty of times. You understand? When something was supposed to happen.
Are the Browns the Cowboys junior? Is that what you're saying?
But we've seen stuff like that happen. We've seen it in the sport of basketball. We've looked at the Milwaukee Bucks once upon a time. Say, hey, man, they're going to finals. What happened? We didn't see Miami taking them out 5 last year, but it happened. You just never know. All I'm saying is when I look at Cleveland, I don't see it. I see the talent on paper. I see the names. But in terms of coming together and winning the division, I'm always pick Pittsburgh or Baltimore first. I'm just going to do that.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Meanwhile, on April 15, 1947, Jackie Robinson broke baseball's color barrier when he made his historic MLB debut. Every year on April 15th today, baseball honors Jackie's legacy by celebrating his life, his values, in his accomplishments. Robinson sacrificing so much to open the door for African Americans, yet black interest and participation in baseball has dramatically declined. Pay attention to these numbers, gentlemen. When Jackie played, 6.7% of rosters were African American. Then in the 70s and 80s, it went up to 20%, and now it's all the way back down to 7%. This according to MLB. Stephen A., what can MLB do to increase black interest in the sport?
Well, I mean, listen, I think that here's the problem. You've got to invest in the communities. You got to remember that sport, a lot of people don't realize this about baseball. It's the one sport where fans actually bring equipment to the game. Think about that. They bring gloves and they bring stuff like that to the games. They enjoy it thoroughly that much. But guess what? In poor communities, they can't afford to. Okay? And so access to these things to play and participate in the sport definitely hinders you to some degree. So it would go a long way towards elevating the profile of the sport and generating interest in the sport from the younger generation and the younger demographics if you chose to invest in impoverished communities and stuff like that to make sure that they're actively involved in the sport. That's number one. Now, to say that Major League Baseball is doing nothing, that would be unfair. Major League Baseball, clearly with its RBI program, reviving baseball in the inner city, is something that's been going on for years. The Mark Teixeiras of the world and others have been intimately involved in that over the years and should be applauded for that. And baseball has tried in certain respects, but they're a bit distracted. And here's where the distractions come into play. You got football and basketball that have elevated in the mind's eye in the United States of America in terms of its popularity. You also have, you know, players from foreign countries that come over to play in Major League Baseball, and that's where you're sending your scouts as well. So you don't have scouts really living in America, like really focusing on a talent that's here, particularly from impoverished communities. And so I think that, again, you've got to go about the business of doing that, but you also have to care. You have to care about the demographic. It has to be alarming to you that only 7% of baseball's populace consists of African Americans. You actually have to care about that. And you also have to speed up the game, because the reality is that when you look at the game taking three and a half hours, sometimes 4 hours, you know, the attention span of folks in today's generation with so many distractions is just not going to be there. Even if you're doing something as simple as watching TV, look at the channels available to us all now compared to what used to be. Look at the streaming outlets available to us now that never existed in the past. There are so many different things to do to occupy your time that if you don't speed up the sport and make the sport itself a bit interesting, catering and trying and making an attempt to ingratiate yourself with that younger community to get them interested in the sport, nothing you do will work any damn way. So that's what comes to my mind about that.
Well, this is a debate show, but here, you know, Jackie Robinson Day, we're not going to debate this topic. We largely agree about this. I think you hit it on the head when you said investment, and you even pointed out why. Let me say this. Baseball was my first love as a team sport. I love baseball. And a lot of times I'll say, actually, baseball is my favorite sport, but that's not true. Baseball is not my favorite sport. The Yankees are my favorite team. Baseball is extremely provincial. It's extremely local, right? Yeah, and partly that's because there are too many games, too many players, too many teams. 162 games in a normal season with 30 teams. Stephen A., if you live in New York, you don't care what's happening in Ohio or California with those teams. You know, like, you just don't. But in football and basketball, you do. You do. There are fewer games. It's easier to follow, right? In football, fewer, one-tenth the number of games. In basketball, far fewer players. And so, there are built-in advantages to basketball and football, to say nothing of this. Even though I love baseball, I acknowledge it's because I grew up with it, right? In our generation, Stephen A., baseball was, if not number one, it was way up there. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to tell you baseball is as good as football or basketball. As a consumer product, it is intrinsically inferior to football and basketball. Nothing's ever going to change that. Sorry. That's the way it is. And so you're already up against it. All the changes in the world, I don't think, are going to make it intrinsically an easier, better, more accessible consumer sport than, say, basketball, which is much easier to understand and more exciting and more action and all that stuff. And so now what are you looking at? You're looking at youth participation, right? And in order to do the best you can to get kids involved, and in this case, African-American youth participation. Well, there are lots of things that go into that. First of all, baseball is a more mechanical sport. So if you are using sports as every ethnic group that has tried to climb out of a bad socioeconomic situation, and African-American people are still per capita in that situation compared to white people in this country, a more mechanical sport with a less certain outcome in the distant future, no matter your abilities, is not as good a bet for you as a sport that's a little less mechanical and a little more reliant on your abilities when you can chart your future more easily. Then you get into the culture of the game. Baseball's culture is the most resistant to change of all the major sports. And when did that culture come up, you know, come about, and whose culture does it reflect? It reflects a culture from the era of segregation that is extremely resistant to change. So you have to address that, and even then you'll be at a deficit. You'll be at a disadvantage. But what you said is the most important thing. You must make investments. In baseball, you're supposed to bring your own equipment. Not only do you need a bunch of kids to play in a big open space to play, which is harder to find in urban areas, but then you need an investment so that the players themselves don't have to invest the same way.
Let me tell you something, too, and I'm saying this and I'm interjecting because I really, really want your response when I throw out a few things that I'm about to throw out right now. We can point the finger at Major League Baseball to some degree, and we've already done that. They can certainly lessen the schedule. It doesn't need to be 162 games a year. It could be 142. You can drop it by 20 games, okay? You can do that. Expand the playoffs, because if you have more participants in the playoffs and you extend it a little bit longer with a lot on the line, and we see the level of urgency attached to the sport, because obviously playoff competition is far more intense than regular season competition, that really gravitates the audience to you. It assists in helping you ingratiate yourself with that audience, because I know for a fact that no matter what our interests were in the sport or is, because I'm a diehard Yankee fan myself growing up as a baseball fan because my father loved it so much. It was nothing compared to October. It was nothing compared to when the playoffs began. Because as things intensified, that's when you want to see. And everybody's interested in it once things intensify. So, again, you limit the regular season. You expand the playoffs, right? Then this is a key thing. We got to stop just pointing the finger at Major League Baseball as a league. How about the players? Yes, they need to market the players, the individual players, a bit more aggressively. No doubt about that. But the players themselves have an obligation to be receptive to that, which a lot of them are not, because you know this as well as I do. You know what? All these athletes would prefer to be private. Some of them are not allowed because they're living under a microscope. Baseball players are incredibly successful at being professional athletes in the public eye, but living relatively private lives, living in their little bubbles, their little cocoons, and not necessarily being overly exposed. The Derek Jeters and others might be aberrations, but Derek Jeter, that was primarily in New York. Any place else he went in the country, even though you knew who he was and you respected the hell out of him, he wasn't bothered to the degree that LeBron James and others were bothered. Mike Trout is the best, okay? What do you know about Mike Trout? Virtually nothing, okay? Tatis and Lindor and all of these other guys, they're on the come up. But what I'm saying is, if you're Major League Baseball, it's important that the players buy into selling the game. Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod, came on this show and talked about that. There's an inherent obligation that you should feel as a player to help market the sport. They don't do that because of what you alluded to, Max, tradition, culture, certain way to do things, not very, very resistant to change. All of these things have assisted in other sports leagues usurping Major League Baseball essentially as America's pastime. And the players who have gotten paid have done virtually nothing about it off the field. On the field, they'll show up. They'll bat over 300 or over 250 anyway. They'll hit their home runs, etc. But what they don't do is market the sport heavily the way NBA players do, or at least used to until load management invaded us. And, of course, to a lesser degree, the National Football League. Major League Baseball and the players need to do a better job of that, Max.
All right. Real quick, we got to go to break. I just want to read a quote that I love from Jackie Robinson. A life is not important except the impact it has on other lives. That's such an important reminder for all of us because we get consumed with our own issues, problems, desires, but we're really here to uplift each other. And we want to honor him today and always.